Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited, because with us today, we have Todd Thomas. Todd is the founder and CEO of Woodchuck. He's also the best-selling author of Unleashing Abundant Energy. Todd, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me on. Really excited to be here.
Likewise. So why don't we start with Woodchuck? Would love to know what problem it's solving in the marketplace.
So Woodchuck is really addressing two pretty huge global problems. The first being the need to reduce waste, and the second, the need for more energy. Woodchuck is a wood waste diversion and renewable clean energy platform. So what we do is we work with construction companies and manufacturing companies to divert materials out of their waste stream. So instead of taking all of their wood to the landfill, we divert that material, we process it, we deliver it to our energy partners that turn that into clean, renewable energy. So we're reducing waste and producing more energy at the same time.
Well, and what was the impetus behind starting the business?
So actually, North Star Clean Energy is a big utility in the state of Michigan. They provide electricity to the full state. They are really committed to renewable energy. They have three energy facilities in the state of Michigan that have the potential to burn biomass to produce renewable energy, but they don't have enough biomass right now. So they're forced to use fossil fuels to generate all the electricity that the state of Michigan needs. Now, that's where they are right now today, but also over the next 10 years, they think they're going to need to double their energy production in order to keep up with the growing energy demand of the state of Michigan. So they came to me and asked me if I could help them come up with a solution to this problem. How can they catch up right now? And how can they basically then double that energy output over the next 10 years? So we came up with a hypothesis that construction and manufacturing wood waste would be an ideal feedstock for energy production. It's dry, it's energy dense. And if we could identify and divert those materials out of the waste streams, keep them from going to the landfill, we could process that and it would be fantastic biomass that could catch them up to where they need to be right now and could be a source of feedstock that we could grow and really help them make sure they're producing enough energy for the state of Michigan for the next 10 years. So that was the genesis. And we launched about 18 months ago in Detroit and it's been going fantastic.
Great. And then I heard part of the definition in there, but for our audience benefit, what is biomass consist of?
Yeah, great question. So biomass is basically any material generally produced through nature that contains carbon. So a lot of times when people think about biomass, they think about forestry or landscaping or agricultural waste, and all of those are different forms of biomass. It's all, you know, basically plants capture carbon through photosynthesis, and then that carbon is in that material, and that material can then be turned into energy. So those are all traditional sources. What we're doing, what's different is there's a huge amount of wood waste in construction and manufacturing. I mean, a huge amount of wood waste in general, but particularly from those two sectors. U.S. landfills are about 30 to 40% wood by volume, just wood that has value that's being put into landfills and really filling up our landfills. If we can take all of that wood and instead of putting it in landfills, it will extend the life of landfills and we'll find a second value out of all this really valuable material.
And so I think if I understood correctly, so put lumber in the pre-production process. So they're producing 2x4s and that they have left over. That'll traditionally make its way to a landfill, but now there's an opportunity to reuse it to generate energy.
That's absolutely true. And think of wood pallets as well. Wood pallets theoretically are multi-use items. Like you should be able to use a pallet 2, 3, 4 times. But the reality is most of the time they're treated as single-use items and they end up in landfills. I mean, literally tens of thousands of tons of perfectly good pallets end up in landfill all the time. So if
Wow.
we can basically recover those and divert those and not send them to the landfill, pallets are really clean, good, dry wood. We can turn that into that's a really good energy feedstock.
Fantastic. So 18 months, exciting. If you can give us some color on what the growth trajectory has been like to date, any highlights you want to call out, and then pitfalls that you've avoided as well.
Sure. One of the very first projects we did was a brand new Amazon distribution center just north of the city of Detroit. And our client was Ryan Construction. Amazon wanted at least 70% of their wood to be diverted. That was their goal. And that was a big challenge for Ryan and for other construction companies because they just don't have a lot of options. So it was really difficult for them to achieve that. We came on, we joined the project, and in the very first month, we diverted 95% of their wood. We
Wow.
sent a really detailed report to Amazon. Amazon was thrilled, but the feedback they quickly gave us was, "We love what you're doing with the wood, but we have these other waste streams. And what we really would like is a 360 report that tells about all of our different waste streams." So we had anticipated this, and we built our woodchuck.ai platform to be very flexible. So very quickly added cardboard and plastic and started diverting those materials as well, and tracking those materials and including that in our reporting. And Amazon was thrilled. The project went really well. At the end of the project, we had diverted 99% of their wood. So it was a huge success.
And how much of Amazon's motivation is just the DNA of the company versus regulations?
Well, I think what we're seeing from Amazon, what we're seeing from a lot of major enterprises, and that is they're under increasing pressure from the public to be more efficient, to reduce costs, to reduce waste, to reduce landfill usage. So, I mean, even as a consumer, you can see that Amazon is putting a lot of focus on how they package things for all of those deliveries. How can they reduce that packaging and make that packaging recyclable or reusable? So they're putting a lot of effort into that. So if we can also help them on the construction side to reduce their waste and add efficiencies on the construction side, that helps their overall goals and the messaging to the market. And Amazon is this the first example because that was the first project we did, but we're seeing that across the board. Ford, IKEA, GM, Starbucks, there are a lot of companies that are very interested in driving efficiencies and reducing waste. And so our clients, the construction companies, are under more and more pressure to build the buildings, and while they do that, provide efficiencies and reduce waste. But also the other missing piece is not just actually divert waste, but be able to track it and report it. So you can give a validated report to your client at the end of the project and say, this is how many tens of tons of wood we diverted and how many tons of cardboard we diverted. This is the total net CO2 that was avoided. And this is the total number of BTUs of renewable energy that was produced from your materials that otherwise would have gone to the landfill. And those reports have tremendous value to the end client, which means they have tremendous value to the construction company.
100%. You triggered a bunch more questions, but I think probably good point for me to stop and ask. I'd love to know a bit about your background leading up to founding Woodchuck.
Yeah, so I've had a fun career. I've gotten to do a lot of projects across a whole bunch of different industries. But the common thread has always been emerging technologies. What are the latest and greatest technologies, and how can we use those to drive efficiencies and improve commercialization opportunities? And really, for the last 10 years, a lot of that has been AI. Woodchuck AI is actually the third AI platform company that I built. My co-founder is Dre Nietzsche-Nelson. This is the third time he and I have done this together. But I would say of all of them, we're most excited about Woodchuck. I mean, what we're doing is just, it's really easy to get excited to go to work every day because I think we're making a real impact on waste reduction, carbon reduction, and clean energy production, which are all things we, non-political, we all agree on efficiency, cost reduction, waste reduction. So we can all agree on that. We can all get excited about that. And I think we're really making an impact. So it's exciting.
Agreed. I mean, it's easy to agree that what you're doing is a win-win. win across the board. I'd love to know, you mentioned the two other AI companies, you know, awesome having a, you know, a repeat founder on the show. If you can give us any insights, lessons learned on and how those businesses unfolded.
Sure. The first one, and where Dre and I met, we were at Stanley Black & Decker, where I ran the Innovation Accelerator. And okay. That accelerator was really focused on using connected technologies and AI to the extent possible to drive efficiencies both within manufacturing and within construction. So actually manufacture the tools more sustainably and then use those connected tools to drive efficiencies within construction. And that was a cool project. We built some amazing tools together, very exciting. From there, we went to a company called Aiden Auto. So Aiden Auto, Aiden stands for AI enabled. And we were really building an AI platform to drive efficiencies within the automotive sector. Aiden continues to grow and do really well right now, a great company. And then this, you know, the Woodchuck opportunity came up where, you know, North Star Clean Energy actually reached out to me and said, you've got this interesting eclectic background across all of these different areas with, you know, a common thread of AI and often a sustainability angle, because with efficiency comes sustainability. And, you know, can you come help us with this energy problem? So it's the first time I've worked specifically in energy, but I've learned so much and it's been so exciting. It's been a great adventure.
Great. I'm curious. So, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you have a vision. How have you managed executing on that vision relative to Northwestern, who has an opinion of how they'd like to see things unfold?
So execution is a great word. One of my favorite expressions is execution is the chariot of genius. So it doesn't matter how brilliant your idea is. If you can't execute, it doesn't matter. So execution is everything. And I think that's really true for startups. You know, in the startup world, by definition, you have limited resources and you need to be really efficient with your time, with your funds, with the skills in your house. So you really need to be able to execute. Also, startups, by their nature, are opportunistic. And you are often seduced to pivot or to expand. And you need to be really careful about those things. Because I think the thing that can help a startup really succeed is clear focus, a single clear focus. And when you make an unnecessary pivot or an unnecessary expansion of your scope, it is a risk to that focus, which ultimately can kill you. So you need to be really clear on when you're looking at all these great new opportunities, do they align and support your long-term vision?
It makes total sense. One of the things you just said that kind of triggers my mind, it's come up on the podcast before, is at what point, or do you have an opinion at what point a founder should reconsider their approach and question whether or not they're on the right track and subsequently pivot?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, every time you have a challenge, you have a hurdle, you need to at least some degree question, you know, why is this a hurdle? Why is this a challenge? Is it, you know, fundamentally a challenge that we need to overcome to get to our vision? Or is there a better path? And that can be on the financing side, the company strategy side, can certainly be on the product side. On the product side, I think two of the most common mistakes, the first most common mistake the startups make is the founders develop a tool or a product or a technology that they think is really cool, and then they go out and try to find somebody who can use it. I think that approach almost always fails. The key is to start with a problem. What is the problem you're trying to solve? Whose problem is it? And will they pay you to solve it? Then go out and build a specific solution for that problem. That works much better than starting with a cool idea and going out and searching for somebody to buy it.
Audience, so key. We agree.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so that's really the biggest mistake that kills startups.
Agreed. You mentioned time, and I'll take a moment here to do a tangent. Look, you know, you've authored a book, Unleashing Abundant Energy. Please, by all means, shameless plug, tell us all about it.
Absolutely.
And then also how you found time to author it. I'm all ears too, please.
So the genesis of unleashing abundant energy really comes from woodchuck. So fundamentally, the genesis of woodchuck was we have this rapidly accelerating demand for energy. And so how does our client reach that ever accelerating demand? So that was the birth of woodchuck. And then as you look at woodchuck takes a very specific solution, right? We're turning wood waste into woody biomass to produce energy. But there's a broader energy ecosystem out there. And when you start to look around globally, right now, today, globally, we produce about 27,000 terawatts of energy. By the year 2050, in order to meet the growing energy demand, we're going to need to get to 52,000 terawatts of energy. That's a massive energy increase in 25 years. And so, how do we do that? So, Unleashing Abundant Energy tries to take a very realistic view of what are all of the different options that we have in order to generate that much electricity. So we look at solar and wind and bioenergy. We look at nuclear. We look at thermal. We look at hydro. We look at all of those different options and figure out, because I think a lot of times the discussion comes down to what's the silver bullet? What's the silver bullet that's going to solve this problem for us? And I think the reality is when you look at the numbers, there is no silver bullet. From where we sit right now today, if we could wave a magic wand and triple our output of all of our renewables, and include nuclear in there, triple all of that, that doesn't get us to 52,000 terawatts. You still need fossil fuel. You still need oil. You still need coal. And in fact, we're going to need more of that than we use now. Even if we triple all those other resources, we're still going to have to use fossil fuel and increase it by about 30% over where we are today. So the book really looks at what are the true costs of all these different energy sectors, both in terms of the actual cost to generate electricity, as well as the environmental cost, what's the carbon cost? The idea is let's have an open, transparent, honest discussion about what our options are and how do we get there. Because again, one thing everybody agrees on is we want abundant energy. In the winter, we want our houses warm. In the summer, we want our houses cool. So how do we guarantee that we have the energy to do that? The answer is every single geography needs to look at their natural resources and produce as much energy as possible locally within your ecosystem, whatever your particular resources are. But then overall, it's really there is no silver bullet. It's we need all of the above. So maximize your local resources so you're importing as little energy as possible. But energy sources that are easily transferable, which is one of the big advantages of oil and gas, it's very transferable. You're going to have to import some energy in most locations. So let's make informed decisions on what we want our balance of energy to be based on true costs.
You probably can devote an entire podcast to the subject, but be curious to know what are the big drivers of the energy demand? I mean, I want to say that I have actually it's more compute power behind AI than it is population growth, but this is outside my area of expertise, and I don't know if it's an easy answer
Compute.
or if it's a complex one.
It's a complex answer, but you're right. I mean, compute power is a lot of it. Crypto, AI, the growth of data centers, I mean, those are creating a ton of energy, and the demand for that's only, accelerating. But at the same time, there's also the electrification of everything, electrification of cars, of tools, of household appliances. I mean, you can see the weakness in the infrastructure. If you say, take a look at the state of California. California buys a lot of EV vehicles. The local infrastructure doesn't support the cars that are there. It's really hard to charge your car easily. If you live in LA and you're going to drive to San Francisco, there's a Starbucks about halfway up there that has 10 Tesla superchargers. That's awesome. But if you get there on a Saturday morning when everybody's going back and forth between LA and San Francisco, you might wait for an hour and a half, 2 hours to get your shot. So we need to build a ton of infrastructure in this country and frankly globally to support the electrification of everything. And so that again becomes a complex issue. What is the initial energy source that is driving all the less electricity? And then how do we transmit it to the places that need it? So it's an infrastructure question, it's a storage question, it's an original source of energy question. If you are charging your car with energy produced from a coal plant, you've actually got a coal-fired car there, right? If you're charging your car from the solar units on top of your house and you're charging at your own garage, well, then you've got a truly green car. But those are the different choices we need to make. And so let's have an honest, transparent discussion about that.
Makes great sense. So one way of saying that, I think it's confident, we can say confidently that barring some exogenous shock we're not aware of, demand's here to stay. We need to have solutions to account for it. So let's come back then to Woodchuck. So having success with Ryan Construction, you know, can you unpack for us, you know, how you determined who your ideal customer profile or ICP was? Was there any iteration? And you know, how do you think about sales cycles? You know, generally speaking, knowing that, you know, larger enterprises take longer to close.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So we started really with large construction companies. Our original thought was large residential developments. You know, multifamily developments produce a lot of wood waste. So that's kind of where we started, and we figured the larger the construction company, the more of these large projects they're going to have, so the more volume of wood. So that's where we started. And quickly that expanded into their suppliers. So take, for example, a truss manufacturer, right? A truss manufacturer builds trusses at their own facility, and then they transport that to job sites often. That's a pretty common setup. So that truss manufacturer, is that a construction company or is that a manufacturing company? So our definition quickly expanded, and we started looking at manufacturing companies. And then we also quickly learned it doesn't really matter what you're manufacturing. Everything that comes to your factory and everything that leaves your factory comes on wooden pallets. So even if you're in the auto industry and everything you're constructing is made out of metal and plastic, you're still generating a massive amount of wood waste. So pretty quickly we said, look, we can look at any construction or manufacturing firm or the suppliers that work within that industry. And then we found that the companies that were most interested in what we were bringing to the table was construction and manufacturing companies that served larger enterprises that had, you know, clear directives on efficiency, cost reduction, landfill reduction. So again, the big construction companies and the big manufacturing companies that ultimately serve Ford and GM and IKEA and Amazon and Walmart, those were the clients that were really receptive to our messaging. And I'd say that was another thing that we actually, I'd say, drastically underestimated was the demand from these construction companies. When we walked in and say, look, this is what we're trying to do, we got amazing receptions because, again, they're getting pressure from their end clients to reduce waste, reduce costs, drive efficiencies, and to be able to validate all of that. And we're just finding that there isn't a lot of options right now out there for construction companies. So Woodchuck is really well received.
That makes great sense. And, you know, tip my hat being in a space where, you know, the enterprise is driving the demand, because it makes material difference for a whole bunch of reasons, top line growth, cash. Curious though, while we're on the subject, are you guys focused exclusively on domestic US opportunities, or have you gotten into Canada, or are you thinking internationally yet?
So we launched initially in Detroit. We've expanded across the whole state of Michigan. We're starting to expand across the Great Lakes area. But really our intent is to really perfect and mature our AI platform over the course of 2025. So that the end of 2025, our processing facilities in Michigan really become showrooms where people from all across North America, or frankly, anywhere across the globe, could come and see our technology working at scale. So for example, our brand new facility in Grand Rapids, Michigan, is an all-electric, full-scale biomass processing facility. And it's fully enabled with our Woodchuck AI platform. So if someone wants to come and visit Grand Rapids, they can see the AI platform working at scale with fully electric equipment processing thousands of tons of biomass. So we're not doing this in a test lab. We're not doing it on a test bench or a computer lab. This is full scale operation with a maturing AI platform. So it's pretty powerful, and I think puts us in a really good position for 2026 when we really want to scale by licensing this technology everywhere.
Fantastic. And it makes good sense too. I mean, I imagine a lot of moving pieces, and so complexity benefits from refinement. I'm curious, what pitfalls have you run into over the past 18 months and key lessons learned as you've been scaling?
So you mentioned it earlier. You asked about sales cycle. When you're dealing with large enterprises, even if you walk into a company and you get a yes, they've got their own procurement process. They've got their own contracting process. They have existing vendors with contracts that are already in place. So you might get a yes and not actually move a single piece of wood for 6 months. So, you know, there are those challenges. Also, when we opened up our new Grand Rapids facility, we love it. It's up and running. We're really thrilled there. But the piece of land that we selected is it spans two counties and three cities. And so to get all of the approvals necessary to get everything in place and up and running and certified and all the requirements checked off, it took us longer than we expected. So, you know, it was probably 6 weeks later than we originally planned to start processing our first load of wood. So, you know, all of those things always take time. And as a startup, you know, as startups move really fast and you can do things in days. You know, a week at a startup is 6 months at a major corporation. So you think you can move really fast. But when your clients are really large enterprises, at some point, your speeds have to come to the same speed. And so startups need to keep that in mind. So as we look at our growth trajectory over the next couple of years, we have throttled back our growth plans a little bit, not because of our technology or because of what we can do, but because that's as fast as our clients can move. And so that's a challenge. And as a founder, you know, of course it's frustrating because you want to move fast, fast, fast. But you can only push your clients as fast as you can push them. It's at the end of the day, it's their time frame.
And so, I mean, it makes complete and total sense. So I'm curious though, was there a conversation, at least in the beginning, to go after small regional builders just to accumulate some wins and experience? Or was the team pretty set that best use of resources was going after the large builders?
Great question. And yeah, there are advantages to, you know, the regional guys or the local guys, and that yes, they can move faster and they can pivot faster. So it's a nice way to add smaller local clients that can just help you kind of immediately start to grow your revenue and get operations going. But we have also found that those smaller guys or regional guys, they don't have the same appetite for the really meticulous tracking, reporting, and validation of what you're doing. And that's a big part of Woodchuck's differentiation, our ability to track all of that and report on that and validate all of that. And so we really found the bigger enterprises had more appetite for that. And we've had pretty good growth right off the bat. So I think we found that we can last the sales cycle. We just closed a seed round funding. So we're well funded. We've got money in the bank. So we can, as long as we plan well and budget well, we can handle the sales cycle. So I think it's better use of, again, limited resources, right? Every startup has limited resources. So for our limited resources, with the sales staff that we have, we find it's the best use of our time to focus on the big boys.
Makes good sense. And also a great segue. Would love to hear what your experience was like closing that financing round.
Well, we were incredibly fortunate. So when we first launched Woodchuck, our initial investor was North Star Clean Energy, the company that I mentioned. So we launched with an investment directly from North Star Clean Energy, and they immediately became our biggest client, buying all of the biomass that we could produce. Then we came out with a seed round, and CMS again invested in the seed round. We added two nice size VCs. And we actually were able to close it pretty quickly and easily. So we're very lucky. And I know we're in a unique situation because I've been through funding rounds with lots of other startups where it's, you know, it's a slog and it goes on for months and months and you kiss a lot of frogs. So Woodchuck, I think part of it comes back to, we have a really simple concept that people understand and relate to fairly quickly. Also, we had great initial growth. So we had revenue within 90 days of launching. And investors like that. So we had a little bit easier path, but I understand for startups that's always tough because that's one of the other things that kills startups is just running out of cash, right? So as the founder of a startup, you always need to be looking at your cash flow and make sure that you start fundraising sooner than you think, because it's going to take longer than you think, and you're going to have delays in your sales cycle. And if you run out of cash, it doesn't matter if you have built the best mousetrap ever built. If you run out of cash, you're out of business.
So I'm curious, then, in your opinion, how do you balance making sure that the company's capitalized to run the business, but also ensuring that you have a good relationship with whomever you're accepting on the cap table?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, the CEO has a lot of different roles. So the founder and the CEO role has to wear a lot of different hats. And the smaller the startup, I mean, the initial stages of a startup, the founder has to wear every hat. You do everything and you build a small team. But I think literally at the end of the day, the single most important job of the CEO is to make sure you don't run out of money. So really, I don't think the CEO ever stops fundraising. As soon as you close your round, fantastic, congratulations, have a sip of champagne, time to start the next round. Let's go. It's kind of like the scene from Elf, right? Where all the elves finish Christmas and they celebrate and they all take a shot of milk. Great, let's get ready for next year. That's got to be the CEO of every startup. As soon as you finish a funding round, it's time to get ready for the next one. Because you never know exactly how long it's going to take to close that next round of funding. Sales cycles are always longer than you want them to be. And I know everybody talks about compressing the sales cycle, but that's hard to do. And there's always going to be delays. The only thing you should really count on in terms of delays is that they will happen and they're going to be longer than you think. So you need to be prepared for them and manage your cash. And that may mean at some point a big juicy deal comes along, but you may have to pass because you don't have the cash flow to support that additional opportunity. So sometimes you may have to ratchet back your sales. As counterintuitive as that seems, if you don't have the cash to support those operations, you can kill your business by growing too fast. So sometimes managing your cash flow means slowing growth and passing on certain opportunities.
Earlier you were talking about reporting and how it's core to the business. Internally, are there specific metrics that you look at to assist manage the business?
So for us, it all comes down to tons moved. How many tons have we moved? What's our cost per ton? What's our revenue per ton? So again, woodchuck is not rocket science. We're taking wood out of the trash and turning it into energy. So it's all about tonnage and processing. So it's a nice simple concept, and we've got a couple of key metrics, but we don't have a list of 10 metrics. It's our metrics are pretty simple. We want to collect more wood every quarter. We want to process and sell more wood every quarter. If we can do that, then we're on the right trajectory.
Brilliant. Love it. Todd, before we wrap up, my go-to, I enjoy asking all of our guests is if you had an opportunity to go back and have a conversation with your younger self, what would you share?
Wow, that's a great question. I would say a couple of things. One, that saying that lots of people like to tell you, if find a job that you love and you'll never work a day in your life, that's a load of crap. Don't listen to it. Work is hard. Find something that you can bring value and that you can excited about going to work, but it's still a job. There's going to be a lot of Monday mornings where you don't turn a cartwheel because you got to go back to work on Monday. It's a job. That's what the money's for. So find a job that you are interested in and that you can bring value, and that's wonderful. I'd say the other thing is don't be seduced by the idea of job security of the big companies. I have found in the course of my career, I have a lot more control when I'm working for myself, when I'm making my own fortune. When you work for a big corporation, I mean, you come out of college and you get the interview with the big name company and you want to take that. And right out of college is probably a great idea because they're going to bring you on board and then give you a ton of training, and that's awesome. But longer term, within a big corporation, divisions get let go all the time. There are cost cuttings and there's layoffs all of the time. If you run your own business, if you work for yourself, you're not going to get laid off. If you succeed or not, it'll be on your own merits, but at least it's within your control, and you have direct impact on that.
I think it's great advice. I agree on all fronts. Todd, great podcast. Thank you. If any of our listeners are interested in getting a hold of you, how can they find you?
You can visit us at woodchuck.ai. You can email me at todd@woodchuck.ai. If you want to look at the book, it's unleashingabundantenergy.com. So love to connect.
Can they find it Amazon or is Seven's own website?
Yeah, it's got a website. You can also go straight to Amazon and type in the title. It should pop right up there for you.
Good stuff. Well, Todd, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. Really insightful podcast. Thank you. And again, for our audience, Todd Thomas, founder and CEO of Woodchuck, also best-selling author of Unleashing Abundant Energy. Again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinStrat Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Take care.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor who would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.